should decide to take the kitty ride. Just stole the pills away until another day. And with him by your side, you soon will swell with pride. And he can say, I made her what she is today. But till then, take the pill and you won't get caught. Yes, till then, take the pill, which no can be bought. Tra-la-la. So for the sexy life, free from the care and strife, just take a pill a day and you won't get that way. And if by some mistake your pill should fail to take, you're still home free, 'cause there's a money back guarantee. But till then, take the pill and you won't get caught. Yes, till then, take the pill, which no can be bought. Girls, what do you got to lose? After all, it's guaranteed by good housekeeping.
That's true.
No, the pill cannot fail, at least I hope not. No, the pill cannot fail, for last night I got caught.
The following is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Peter Otis.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Dr. Stephen Toop becomes UBC's 12th president. Mayor Arar acknowledges the RCMP apology. And on commentary, Phil Caudry gets critical with both conservative and liberal plans for addressing climate change. We'll have all this plus arts, sports, and your weekend weather forecast coming up in the next hour right here on News 101.
You, by the authority of the university, I now install you, Stephen J. Toop, in the office of president and vice chancellor of the University of British Columbia.
With these words, Chancellor McGeckern installed UBC's 12th president, Dr. Stephen Toop, at the Chan Center earlier today. Present at the ceremony were well-wishers from universities across the world, faculty, students, and even some darn good performers. In his inauguration speech, President Toop was quick to outline his top priorities. He would set up the president's special advisor on First Nations issues. After all, one of the goals for Professor Toop's presidency is to increase First Nations presence at the institution.
As a result of this initiative,
Dr. Toop also promised to focus on recruiting more out-of-province students as well as international graduate students. One of the key announcements during Dr. Toop's speech was the creation of two funds. The $5 million Martha Piper Endowment Fund will be taken from the revenue of the University Town Project and used for interdisciplinary and international research. The second $3 million fund will enable the recruitment of postdoctoral fellows for undergraduate teaching. Paying homage to his predecessors, Stephen Toop also acknowledged the vital importance of initiatives such as the Learning Exchange and the Sustainability Office, emphasizing the need for even greater cooperation between these programs and the classroom. Dr. Toop promised to expand both. In the end, Dr. Toop repeated his two key points as to solidify their importance. Firstly, the primary focus of UBC will now be on students. And secondly, Dr. Toop has a vision for UBC as being a provincial university without petty provincialism, a national university without aggressive nationalism, and a global university without blind acceptance of globalization. Now, with a look at other local news, here are Mary Layton and Evan Hesketh.
Two UBC fisheries professors have been recognized for their efforts to help understand human impact on the world's oceans. Daniel Pauly and Carl Walters were awarded the 2006 Volvo Environment Prize. They will each receive over $75,000 for their research. The prize has been given out annually since 1988 to promote research and development across the environmental spectrum. The pair's work focused on how the world's dwindling fishery stocks are analyzed and managed. The award ceremony is slated for October 26th in Stockholm, Sweden.
By the time you wake up tomorrow, Vancouver's historic Woodward's building will be no more. The building will be demolished in dramatic fashion at 8:30 a.m. with explosives taking down most of the structure. The building is being razed to make way for a new $300 million real estate development. The new block at Hastings and Abbott will be anchored by SFU's School of Contemporary Arts and a 40-story condominium. Woodward's original 1903 structure and the iconic spinning W will remain for their heritage value and be incorporated into the new design.
Politicians, planners, and citizens gathered Wednesday night to discuss the city's growing affordable housing crisis. The five-member panel was led by NDP MLA Gregor Robertson. The purpose was to hear from concerned residents who can no longer afford to live in Vancouver because affordable rental properties are becoming scarce. Some put the blame on Olympic-driven growth, but according to the former Vancouver councillor Jim Green, the Olympics are an opportunity to move projects forward. Meanwhile, Robertson is circulating a petition asking Vancouver City Hall to put a moratorium on the demolition of affordable rental buildings.
The Vancouver Aquarium will be holding public open houses this week to seek feedback on its controversial expansion plans. The proposed renovations will include larger pools, an expanded medical center, and a sit-down restaurant, increasing the size of the aquarium by 50%. However, opposition has been vocal about the proposal. Animal rights activists fear it will increase the number of animals the aquarium holds in captivity. Stanley Park supporters oppose the use of parkland for the expansion. There have also been calls for a referendum to decide in a more democratic fashion. The open houses will be held at the Kilnerney Community Center tomorrow from 2 until 5 and at the Dunbar Community Center on Tuesday from 6 until 9.
Political unrest is growing at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, where students are calling for the impeachment of the student union president. A group calling themselves Students for a Democratic University claims they have a petition containing the signatures of nearly 10% of the student body. Spokesperson Brian Jones says that's almost double the amount required to call a special meeting of the student union to impeach the president and six other directors. He says the petition is being ignored, and now he's threatening legal action. The group alleges student fees are being mismanaged.
Although gasoline prices are dropping all across Canada, they remain fairly high in Greater Vancouver. After a drop into the mid-90s, prices at the pumps climbed back over a dollar this week. The national average for gasoline is about 87.9 cents per liter, leaving analysts scrambling to explain why Vancouverites are still paying around a dollar a liter. Michael Irvin with the Calgary-based consulting firm MJ Irvin & Associates says supply issues are putting the West Coast at a disadvantage. He says Eastern Canadian cities can easily access fuel supplies outside of North America, particularly in Europe. The West Coast, though, is much more dependent on the domestic fuel supply, and local refineries haven't been able to keep up. Still, Irvin expects prices will fall in Vancouver as the seasonal demand continues to drop. We're now going to take a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
The Friends of CITR card is here. Buy your card now and get great discounts at businesses throughout the Lower Mainland, including Antisocial Skate Shop and Gallery, Hits Boutique, Burku's Angels, the People's Co-op Bookstore, Spartacus Books, and Magpie Magazine Gallery. The Friends of CITR card is $5 for CITR members and $15 for anyone else. Check out www.citr.ca/friends for a full listing of Friends of Businesses. Pick up your card today and support CITR Radio.
Easy Star All-Stars, Friday, October 6th at Richards on Richards. The Radio Dread Tour. Tickets at all Ticketmaster outlets. Tickets also at High Life, Zulu, Salon Supreme, Caribbean Market, Vanessa Style, and Rehana's Roti. The Easy Star All-Stars Radio Dread Tour. From the group that brought you Dub Side of the Moon.
You UBC Rec is everything that is recreation on campus. No matter how you play, UBC Rec is your resource for fun activities. This student program is operated by over 140 volunteers, and it is the largest intramural recreation organization in Canada. Programs cover fitness, instructional classes, outdoor recreation, drop-in sports, special events, small tournaments, and intramural leagues. All the registration information is available in the Student Recreation Center or online at rec.ubc.ca. UBC Rec, how do you play?
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:10. Starting this fall, British Columbians will have the opportunity to voice their opinions about the healthcare system in this province. With more on this and other provincial news, here are Evan Hesketh and Mary Layton.
Yesterday, Premier Gordon Campbell unveiled the details of his conversation on health strategy, which will engage health professionals, experts, and the public in a series of forums. The insights gained from these dialogues will eventually be incorporated into the government's healthcare improvement plan, which will be announced next fall. However, NDP health critic Adrian Dix has his doubts. He says the government has failed to follow through on earlier healthcare commitments and believes the consultation process will be a one-sided conversation. Other critics say it will open the door for more private health providers. BC residents may contribute in a number of ways, including regional forums, through their MLAs, and via the internet.
Residents of Hartley Bay, who helped rescue passengers from the sinking BC ferry Queen of the North, will no longer have to cover the cost of getting to their own hero ceremony. Chief Bob Hill says the provincial government and private companies have now agreed to cover travel expenses for the 18 people coming from the community. They are headed for dinner at the Lieutenant Governor's residence in Victoria this weekend. The trip would have cost the band $25,000. Hill says he's pleased everything has come together, and he feels the dinner is something his people deserve. Hartley Bay residents sprung into action during the early morning of March 22nd when they heard the Mayday call from the Queen of the North over VH radio.
An Olympic watchdog group is calling for another province-wide referendum on the Vancouver Olympics, saying organizers are racking up their broken promises. Chris Shaw with the 2010 Watch says the Vancouver Organizing Committee has let down taxpayers financially and environmentally. He says there has to be a very serious alarm going off after a recent Auditor General report revealed the costs of the Games are much higher than organizers anticipated. VanOck spokesperson Renee Smith-Vallad admits there are some inflationary costs that can't be controlled, which is why their plans are under constant revision. She insists that VanOck is working closely with contractors on devising affordable venue plans.
Health officials on Vancouver Island say a new 230-bed hospital planned to be built near Mount Washington would close St. Joseph's Hospital in Comox. Island Health Authority Chair Jack Crute said earlier this week that under the proposal, St. Joseph's would be converted to a care facility, while the hospital in Campbell River would remain open for emergencies and acute care. Crute says the new North Island Regional Hospital would offer more complicated acute care for the region, along with high-tech diagnostics. The goal is to attract and retain specialists by locating them at one site instead of dividing resources between two existing hospitals. The authority, however, is being criticized for the plan. They say residents in both Campbell River and the Comox Valley want their existing hospitals upgraded instead of consolidated into a single regional hospital. The $200 million project could take 10 years to complete. We're going to take another break now, but when we come back, we'll update you on the national and international headlines. Stay with us. News 101 will be right back after this.
Are you concerned about the health effects of marketing junk food to our kids? Are you passionate about supporting local and sustainable farming? Do you believe in a just and sustainable food system where adequate and nutritious food is accessible to everyone? If so, mark your calendars for the Bridging Borders Towards Food Security Conference, taking place from October 7th to 11th at Vancouver's Sheraton Wall Center. The conference will feature dozens of workshops, plenaries, field trips, and a delectable harvest celebration with food produced by some of the Lower Mainland's finest chefs and local farmers. the Bridging Borders Towards Food Security Conference, October 7th to 11th in Vancouver. Register online at www.bridgingbordersconference.org. Registration closes September 29th, so sign up now.
Gain the freshman 15? Well, you probably will, so why not gain it ethically? Sprouts, the student-run not-for-profit grocery store, is now open in the lower level of the UBC Student Union Building across from Travel Cuts in the Wellness Center. Sprouts is committed to providing the UBC community with healthy, locally produced, organic, and fair trade products at great prices. Sprouts will be open from 9:30 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. So you want to tag a ride on the sustainable gravy train? Sprouts is now looking for volunteers to help out with tabling, outreach, and at the storefront. So just drop by and pick up your application.
And the news continues on CITR. Mayor Arar has thanked RCMP Commissioner Giuliano Zaccardelli for apologizing for the mistakes his agency made that led to Arar's detention and torture in a Syrian prison. Arar and his wife spoke with Zaccardelli this afternoon in Kamloops, a day after Zaccardelli appeared before a House of Commons committee to speak about the case. Arar says he is satisfied that the commissioner acknowledges the serious mistakes that were made and the harm they caused for his family. The Syrian-born Canadian was returning to Canada from a family vacation in Tunisia 4 years ago when he was detained during a stopover in New York City. Within days, he was sent to Syria over suspicions from U.S. authorities that Arar was linked to Al-Qaeda. Now with a look at other national news, here again are Mary Layton and Evan Hesketh.
Statistics Canada released its back-to-school factbook yesterday, bringing together information on tuition, student spending, and debt from a series of recently released education studies. The report says that although increased tuition fees are a difficult burden, university graduates can expect lower rates of unemployment. Undergraduates in Canada are paying on average of 3.2% more in tuition this year than they did last year. The increase is higher than the rate of inflation, which was 2.4% between July 2005 and July 2006. Researchers note that more students are taking on part-time jobs to help pay for their education costs, with nearly half of students reporting they had worked during the 2004-2005 school year. In 1976, only 28% of students reported working while taking classes.
Liberal leadership hopeful Joe Volpe has been fined $20,000 by the Liberal Party for improperly signing up members in Quebec. Party officials say Volpe's team provided membership forms to Quebec cultural groups but failed to ensure new members paid their own fees, which were instead paid for by campaign volunteers. This violates a party rule that a new member must pay their fees out of their own pocket. This is the second time Volpe's campaign has taken some heat. Earlier, they were accused of improperly taking donations from children. Liberals will choose their next leader at their party convention on December 2nd. Political pundits consider Michael Ignatieff and former Ontario Premier Bob Rae the frontrunners in the race.
A slowdown in central Canada's economy will lead the Bank of Canada to chop its lending rate by as much as 1 percentage point by the end of 2007. This is according to the CIBC World Markets report. Central bank's overnight lending rate, now at 4.25%, could fall as low as 3.25% over the next year in an effort to revive a badly sagging central Canadian economy. The agency sees a similar trend south of the 49th parallel, where it predicts the U.S. Federal Reserve will trim its overnight rate by 0.75 percentage point. The forecast predicts growing regional disparities in 2007. It is calling for rosy times in resource-rich Alberta, but another 50,000 factory jobs disappearing next year in Ontario. The forecast calls for the loonie to remain in the high 80s for the next year, easing to 87 cents U.S. by the end of 2007. The report comes just a week after TD Canada Trust also predicted 2007 to be a bumpy year for Canada's economy. Meanwhile, in the United States, real estate prices have been stagnating since August, which is the first indicator of the economy cooling off.
Newfoundland and Labrador are due to release a government report on the state of their ferry fleet in the first week of October. But already the experts are warning that they're too old to be safe. Experts say that some remain on the water for more than a decade longer than their builders intended. Of the 20-ship fleet, the newest ferry is already 16 years old, and the oldest is 49. The government has responded by saying that there is no need for concern, because the ships are inspected by Transport Canada. The province has plans to build new ships, but they probably won't be on the water for years. Meanwhile, the people living in the tiny communities of rural Newfoundland and Labrador, who depend on the ferries, wait for the provincial report.
Senator Romeo Dallaire says the concept of peacekeeping has disappeared in this new era of warfare. During a lecture to students at the University of Saskatchewan on Wednesday, Dallaire said the world needs a leader to usher in a new era of global justice. The retired Canadian general who led the ill-fated UN force during the Rwandan genocide says this country's military hasn't been engaged in real peacekeeping in the last 15 years. He criticized Canada for ignoring the humanitarian crisis in Darfur, but offered support for the Canadian mission in Afghanistan, saying the country must be able to follow through with its commitment and accept that casualties are inevitable.
In international news, the U.S. Senate has unanimously approved a record military spending budget that includes an additional $70 billion for military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yan Meixia reports from Washington.
The $70 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan is only a down payment on war costs. Another funding infusion for the wars will happen next spring. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service, the war in Iraq has cost nearly $400 billion. That is more than $3,000 for every American household, at a rate nearly $11 million per hour. Illinois Senator Richard Durbin is the assistant minority leader. He says funding for the war will continue under a Democrats-controlled Congress.
I think we've got to understand that our troops are still going to need the resources to protect themselves and come home safely. Even if I disagree with the policy, and I do, of this administration, I'm not going to take it out on the troops.
In the meantime, Durbin says it's time to set a plan to withdraw troops. Anita Dunk is the research director at the National Priorities Project. She says the funding for the war is a complicated issue.
One way of thinking about funding is if there isn't any funding for the war, there won't be a war. But the two are related. I mean, we can't not spend money and wage a war. We have to not wage the war, and then we won't have to spend the money. So the real call needs to be a swift but responsible removal of troops from Iraq.
Representative Ike Skelton, highest-ranking Democrat on the House Armed Service Committee, says the bill has his party's support.
We are a nation at war, two wars, one in Iraq and the other in Afghanistan, which is the genesis of the terrorism. Many good things in this bill relating to things that the Democrats have been pursuing and fighting for years.
Vic Snyder, representative of Arkansas, is another Democratic member of the Armed Service Committee. He laments that oversight is not a part of the bill.
We really needed to have something comparable to the Truman Commission in this bill. You know, the American people are concerned about the billions and billions of dollars that we're having difficulty accounting for in Iraq, the billions and billions of dollars that American taxpayers put forward for reconstruction, and yet don't see the product out there.
Earlier this week, a House panel was told in a hearing that U.S. contractors in Iraq used government funding to build substandard projects. Among the 13 projects that failed to meet standards, a $75 million police academy was the most problematic one. Skelton promises if Democrats regain control of the House, his committee would strengthen oversight on military spending. The defense spending bill is heading to the White House. President Bush says he will sign it into law. The Congress has only one day before its recess. It has only passed one out of 11 budget bills. For Free Speech Radio News, Ye Meixie on Capitol Hill.
And thanks to Free Speech Radio News for making that piece available for rebroadcast. Zimbabwe's annual inflation rate continues its upward surge, reaching a record high of 1,200% in August and adding greater strain to the economy. The latest rise, which represents a month-on-month climb of 211%, came after a slight fall in June and July. In other words, goods cost more than 13 times what they did this time last year. President Robert Mugabe denies claims that the government policies, including land reforms, have contributed to the problems. He instead blames domestic and foreign enemies for the country's difficulties. But many analysts have said that the ruling party has played a key role in precipitating the crisis. They argue the government aggravates the situation when it took control of land owned by white farmers, which triggered a sharp drop in production and exports of agricultural goods. The result precipitated an unemployment rate of 70% and widespread food shortages, in addition to staggering inflation. And that's international news. It's time for another break here on News 101, but stay tuned for commentary and much more coming up on the other side.
Have you heard? The AMS has reopened the Sexual Assault Support Center. SASC has a great new location in rooms 119A and B on the main floor of the sub, right across from McInnes Field. And we have full-time hours now, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Call ahead and make an appointment to suit your schedule, or drop in whenever the need arises. The SASC works within a feminist, anti-oppression perspective to provide support in the form of one-on-one counseling, accompaniments, advocacy, information, and referrals to male, female, and trans-identified survivors of violence. We also provide support and information for survivors' friends, family members, and partners. All the services provided at SASC are free, confidential, and non-judgmental. We work with you to identify and support your decisions about your needs. For more information, call 604-827-5180 or visit rooms 119A and B in the sub.
CITR 101.9 FM is your home for live UBC sports.
Second down and 18 for the Clan at row 37. We got our streaker.
Here's the streaker.
Davies dropped back. He's got a throw.
Threw it.
That was
going to
hurt it. And the streaker, I think, got Simon Fraser a first down. And we got security getting after him. He's into the damn you call it.
He's into the end zone and he's breakdown. In the end zone, bare naked. He's being chased by security and he's
going to
the air. He fell down.
Go!
Security is gone.
He's gone.
Get
the
up the fence.
Oh, he's
going. You got to love college football.
Did I mention it is also unedited and commercial free?
He is going to put his team shorthanded.
As smart as your mom was when she decided not to take birth control.
Well, there you have it.
All the information about our sports department can be found on our website, citr.ca.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Welcome back to News 101. It's now time for commentary, and this week, Phil Caudry offers his opinion on why the Conservative government's Made in Canada environmental plan, as well as plans from frontrunners in the Liberal leadership race, do not offer much hope for reducing greenhouse gases.
Federal Environmental Commissioner Joanne Gelinas released a report Thursday criticizing Canadian measures in reducing greenhouse gases. The report urges Canada to develop a clear and realistic plan to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The report examined the past Liberal government's record, which, for the most part, has been lots of talk and little walk. While the Liberals campaigned as being on the fore of environmental conservation, including signing the Kyoto Accord and promising to reduce emissions by 6% below 1990 levels, Canada is not on target to achieve this goal. In fact, the report found that by 2004, emissions were 26.6% above the 1990 levels of emissions. However, the report did not criticize the Liberals exclusively. The Tories didn't get off the hook either. Gelinas stated that Prime Minister Stephen Harper and his party should not use the Liberals' lack of success with Kyoto as a means of making no progress on the environmental front. The report cited Ottawa had not adequately targeted the oil and gas industries and had a total lack of clear, measurable goals. It should come as no surprise to Canadians that 80% of our country's emissions are a result of the oil and gas industry. Harper's decided to pull Canada out of the Kyoto Protocol in favor of a Made in Canada solution, details of which have yet to be released. Without the necessary mechanisms that an international treaty like Kyoto would provide, including measures for noncompliance, initiatives at the national level give countries little incentive in the short term to cut emission rates. In an increasingly globalized world, countries who ignore environmental standards are going to have a leg up on other states, creating a race to the bottom. The conservative plan is clearly not going to work to secure environmental sustainability, but rather please their oil donors in Alberta. But the past Liberal plan has suffered the same fate. The leading candidates for the federal Liberal leadership don't offer much more for the future either. Stéphane Dion, former Minister of the Environment, has made the environment the centerpiece in his bid for leadership. Yet, under his watch, Liberal inaction was only further fueled. Scott Bryson also puts the environment on top of his list of priorities if he were to become Prime Minister. He argues for Canada to be fueled by a strong green economy. Yet with only his partner and no children in tow, he owns two vehicles, one of which is an SUV. Not exactly leading by example. Bob Rae, the former NDP Premier, is currently the co-frontrunner for the Liberal leadership. He also offers a conceptually strong environmental plan. However, he did the same during his campaign to become Ontario's Premier, and he was unable to follow through with his promises. Michael Ignatieff, the other frontrunner, offers what he has coined Canada's first National Sustainable Development Act, requiring all federal policy to comply with the government's environmental objectives and targets. Ignatieff offers much more than he could ever achieve, including reducing Canada's greenhouse gas emissions by 50% or more below 1990 levels by 2050, and finding a way to tax junk mail. His plan to involve a carbon tax would ensure no Liberals would be elected in Alberta for years to come. He also knows that he can write off a good portion of Ontario with their auto sector providing many jobs for the province. Ignatieff is not stupid, though. He knows this, and it would be political suicide for him to follow through with this plan if crowned the winner of the Liberal leadership race. The future is looking so bright you gotta wear shades. Not because of sound environmental policy, but because of global warming. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Cottery.
And thank you, Phil. Now to the lighter side of the news, and with our pick this week from the file of bizarre oddities, here's our producer, Robert Mangelsdorf.
Another local situation to tell you about this week, Peter. Recently, German cult film director Uwe Boll was so fed up with people bashing his movies that he went postal and knocked out some of his harshest critics in the boxing ring. The jovial director challenged his detractors, most of whom ripped his movies to shreds in online reviews, to take a swing at him in the ring. And sure enough, five people were selected. One fight took place in Malaga, Spain in September, and the other on Saturday at an outdoor venue here in Vancouver. One by one, Bull knocked out his opponents in the boxing ring amid a glitzy rock and roll spectacle with loud German techno, heavy metal music, and hundreds of screaming Bull fans.
Now, one thing that the story doesn't mention, Rob, is why did this fight take place in Vancouver? Do you know?
I have no idea. A friend of mine was there, and he said it was one of the most ridiculous things he has ever seen.
Yeah, because I just don't see your average Vancouverite, you know, sipping your latte and in your yoga wear on your way, you know, to get your SUV from the yoga class. I don't see them stopping by and being like, yeah, fight! Bring it, you know? Like, Vancouverites just aren't like that.
I think you underestimate the underlying ferocity of the Yale Town yuppie.
You think so?
I know so.
Oh, okay. So, you know, yoga's just a way to get that anger out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, watch out for them yoga moms.
And
danger.
And you better not mix up their order at Starbucks, you know? Because it's a non-fat latte.
Heaven help you.
Yeah. So, but no word on why this fight was in Vancouver.
No, I don't know for certain why it was. I would assume, and as a journalist you're never supposed to assume, but I'm going to anyways, that it probably had something to do with the fact that he's filming a movie here.
Or it could also be that maybe one of his films is showing at the film festival.
There you go.
I don't know. Thank you very much for that, Rob.
You're very welcome.
It's break time again, but coming up next, the Arts Report with Ainsley Francis. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
CITR 101.9 FM is your home for live UBC sports.
Second down and 18 for the Clan at row 37. We got our streaker.
Here's the streaker.
Davies drops back. He's got a throw.
Throw it to the streaker.
And the streaker, I think, got
Did I mention it is also unedited and commercial-free?
He's going to put his team shorthanded.
As smart as your mom was when she decided not to take birth control!
Well, there you have it.
All the information about our sports department can be found on our website, citr.ca.
I think just about everyone is familiar with stories about dead people or animals that continued moving after they died.
CITR's Exquisite Corpse moves to Thursday night with your host, DJ Lee.
You see, we move our muscles as a result of an electrochemical reaction in our nerves.
Tonight, we can be as one. Tonight.
Usually, though, the resulting movement is just a twitch.
101.9 Vancouver.
Wild geese that fly with their wings tied up with strings.
I don't know, Don. I think I was more comfortable with the twitching when I thought I was just imagining it.
Exquisite Corpse with your host, DJ Bleak. Now 7:30 to 9 p.m. Thursdays. Still putting the mental in experimental.
Well, it could be worse.
Welcome back to News 101. It's 5:36. I'm Peter Otis, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Tyler Noble is off in North Vancouver getting set to call high school football for us later tonight. We'll have a preview of that and other sports news in a little bit, but first, to the arts, and here's Ainsley Francis.
Thanks. This week in arts, we have one review. It's of A Beautiful Thing, which is currently playing at UBC's Freddie Wood Theatre. It's by Jonathan Harvey, and it's the Canadian premiere. Next, we have a podcast from UBC Theatre about the making of A Beautiful Thing. And after that, you have arts listings as usual. So here is my review. Theatre at UBC opened their 2006-2007 season spectacularly with the Canadian premiere of English playwright Jonathan Harvey's Beautiful Thing. This production demonstrates how much theatre at UBC has improved in the past few years. Directed by Stephen Heatley, the production was crisp and heartfelt. Beautiful Thing follows the coming of age of three teenagers in Thamesmead, a rundown neighborhood in South London, which doesn't show much room for growth for those who live there. In particular, it followed the growing love between Stephen, or Stee, and Jamie, who live next door to each other in the tenements. Lay, played by Olivia Rameau, has parents that are perpetually absent, forcing her to show a certain strength, or at least unwillingness to show vulnerability. She has been banned from her school for undisclosed reasons, but has a drive to get back in. She is the comic relief in the show, and her obsession with the music of Mama Cass is refreshing, and her honesty and willingness to defend her friends is admirable. Jamie, played by Kevin Krausler, is a bit of a misfit. He doesn't get along well in school, and to some extent wishes that he could. Jamie lives with his mother, who is overbearing and potentially trying to relive her youth, which is difficult because she has a son who is quickly growing up. Stee, played by Ira Cooper, is Jamie's next-door neighbor. He is facing parental abuse and turns to his friends Leigh and Jamie for support against his family. Jamie's mother, Sandra, is played by Joanna Rinelli. She is an interesting character, though through most of the play she is overbearing and somewhat self-interested, actually getting into a fistfight with her son. But when she finds out that Stee and Jamie are in love and that they are being criticized, or in Stee's case, beaten up because of it, she is supportive and helpful. She defends Stee against his father and shelters him when he is in need. Her boyfriend, Tony, is played by Evan Frayne, and is hilarious. He tries to be supportive of Jamie, but is a little bit flaky, and his advice is rarely complete, mostly because he doesn't finish all the sentences he says. The sets are designed by Lachlan Johnston and are the most incredible thing I've seen at UBC. The tenement house has been built thrusting off the stage, with Jamie's bedroom actually hanging off the edge almost over the audience. Beautiful Thing runs at the Frederick Wood Theatre until September 30th. That's tomorrow, so if you want to see it, which you should because it's fabulous, you should get down there tonight or tomorrow. Also, if you want to get free tickets, we have two pairs of tickets to give away for tomorrow's show. That's closing night, September 30th. If you want to win them, call in 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. And answer this question. Who is the director of A Beautiful Thing? That's 604-822-2487 or 604-UBC-CITR.
XPod Radio presents Theatre at UBC Podcast, Episode 1, Beautiful Thing. Director Stephen Heatley.
Jonathan Harvey calls it an urban fairy tale. And when you think about fairy tales, you know, outside the realm of Walt Disney, I mean, you've got They Lived Happily Ever After until, you know, the beautiful princess's mother came to live with them and decided to eat the couple's children, you know, that sort of thing. It's got big, warm, fuzzy parts, but it's also got really terrible sort of domestic abuse parts. And it's funny, funny, funny. And then damn near tragic. And it's poignant as well as being kind of acerbic at times. I wanted to do a play that was contemporary that had and that students on a university campus would be interested in and could identify with. And I also wanted to do a play that had really good acting challenges, and this one has great acting challenges, and it's a fantastic story.
Actor Ira Cooper.
My name is Ira Jacob Cooper. I'm in third year of the Department of Fine Arts Theater. I'm playing Stee, a.k.a. Steven. I think this play will actually is actually good, because when I went to high school, I had really nothing to go on, no one to really turn to. So it's actually geared towards people who are young. It actually offers some sense of hope and some sense of it opens a dialogue finally for people to talk about issues that lovely musicals and happy, you know, Teletubbies will never talk about.
Actor Kevin Krausler.
My name's Kevin Krausler, and I play Jamie. Well, there's a lot that's been pretty demanding. I mean, physically, we have me and Joanna have a knockdown, drag-out fight. There's multiple fight scenes that have left me a little bit bruised, I found out this morning. All the characters, they deal with things that are very universal, like Leah and Jamie, and all of them to a certain extent deal with being victimized over the course of the play. It's about self-empowerment, and it's about finding, you know, the strength within yourself to overcome all of these different obstacles that the world is guaranteed to throw at you at some point or another. And even though they're not all the same troubles, they're unified in that it's incumbent upon individuals themselves to either succumb to being victims or rise above.
Actor Joanna Ranelli.
Joanna Marie Ranelli. It's being immersed by everybody else, so listening to everyone else. And there's a few sounds, I think, that help. Like, I've done a Manchester thing before, and it was just a couple sounds. And once I think you have that, but I don't know. It's hard not to slip in and out of it as well. Then you have a director that helps you.
South London dialect. Lesson number one.
Talking always. The ahs and all. The softeners and the softened L's. They all dance backwards.
This is actually my line in the show, so I better get it right. They all dance backwards and never get married.
Let's talk to the all dance backwards. Character, what is your name?
Hello, my name's Olivia. And I play Leah in Beautiful Thing. Leah is a 16-year-old girl who has been kicked out of school. She's quite aggressive and sassy. But what I've found really interesting about this character is that her aggressive behavior really does come out of a place of real vulnerability. She'll say very rude things when she's been hurt. In this world, she really needs to appear tough, and she can't show how soft she is. She loves Mama Cass. Mama Cass is her idol. Yes, sung by me. I'm not singing for you now, no. The mic makes me nervous. Okay, I'll hold it.
Music that you heard in this podcast appears in the production of Beautiful Thing. It was created by composer and sound designer Patrick Pennyfather. For more information, go to www.theater.ubc.ca. Memorized it yet?
This podcast was created by the team of xpodradio.com.
Do you want to be cultured? Do you want to know more about theater, music, and art? Well, News 101 has the solution for you. Every week, we bring you everything you need to know about what's going on in the arts in and around Vancouver. Here are this week's arts listings. Beckett Cent is a festival of theater presentations, films, free events, and lectures in recognition of the centenary of Samuel Beckett's birth. That runs October 2nd to 7th at the Chen Center for the Performing Arts and the Frederick Wood Theater, right here at UBC. The Unexpected Co-op presents The Unexpected Man. It's the Vancouver premiere of Yasmin Reza's play about relationships between fellow travelers, authors, and their readers, friends and lovers, men and women. It's translated by Christopher Hampton and directed by Katrina Dunn. That runs October 4th to 21st at the Jericho Arts Center on Discovery. Electric Company Theatre presents a play about the inventor of alternating current. It's called Brilliant, The Blinding Enlightenment of Nikola Tesla, and runs October 4th to 7th at 8 p.m. at the Shadbolt Centre for the Arts in Burnaby. The Arts Club Centre presents Griffin and Sabine. It's a lyrical romance adapted from the trilogies of Vancouver writer and visual artist Nick Bantock. That runs October 5th to November 4th at the Granville Island Stage. Studio 58 presents Christian Grab's comedy called Comedy, Satire, Irony, and Deeper Meaning. It's about three men seeking the hand of a beautiful young woman, directed by Jules Neumann. That runs October 5th to 22nd at Studio 58 at Langara College. In dance, new works in association with the Dance Center are presenting Stone Drift. It's the world premiere of Ariosa's full-length dance, choreographed by Julia Taff and featuring cinematic projections and aerial work. That runs until September 30th at the Scotiabank Dance Center. Banger the Power Hour is presented by Ruby Slippers Theatre. It's the premiere of interdisciplinary artist Tara Shine Friedenberg's show about a teenage metalhead navigating the dog-eat-dog world of high school. That also runs until September 30th, but at the Firehall Arts Center. The electronic series is Move the Company, presenting two new works by Josh Beamish and a preview of the latest work by Amber Funk-Barton. That is October 5th to 7th at 8 p.m. at the Scotiabank Dance Center. In music, Bramwell Tove is conducting the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra and guest pianist Jean-Yves Thibodeau in A Hero's Life. It's a concert of music by Wagner, Liszt, and Strauss. That runs September 30th and October 2nd at 8 p.m. at the Orpheum. Something to Sing About is a musical fundraiser for the Canadian Red Cross featuring local opera singers performing in English, Italian, and German, also French and Mandarin. That runs September 30th at 7:30 p.m. at the Broadway Church. Finally, in arts listings, From Folk, Legends, and Myth will be at Ariel Barnes on cello, Brenda Fedrup on flute, Jane Hayes on piano, and Heather Palsy on singing soprano. Performing music by Cohen, Corvigiano, Kothard, Daniel, Rachmaninoff, and Ravel. That is on October 1st at 3 p.m. at the Christchurch Cathedral on Burrard. And that's this week's arts listings.
And thank you for that, Ainsley. It is now 5:48 and time for another break here on CITR, but stay with us for Thunderbird Ion Sports with Jason Wang.
For the very best in bluegrass music, plus classic country, Cajun, rockabilly, western swing, and whatever jumps off the shelves at us, tune in every Tuesday morning at 6:30 for Pacific Pickin' with your host, Arthur Berman.
And I'm Andrea.
The lovely Andrea, who will also provide you with our concert calendar and every bit of news and information you can possibly need. And as if that wasn't enough, there's a warm-up show at 6 featuring a little bit of a wider variety of roots and branches of bluegrass music. So tune in each morning, 6 for the warm-up show, 6:30 for the main show, Pacific Pickin' on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver.
Each and every Wednesday night, check out 2 hours of eclectic roots music on Folk Oasis, featuring traditional and contemporary folk world music, acoustic blues, bluegrass, and much more. Mostly acoustic, always eclectic, and entirely a Kumbaya free zone. That's Folk Oasis, Wednesday nights, 9 to 11 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Back to News 101, and as I promised before, it's now time for Thunderbird Ion Sports with Jason Wang.
Ah, thank you, Peter. Welcome to this Friday presidential installation edition of Thunderbird IUBC Varsity Sports Report, where we begin with the T-Birds on the gridiron. UBC football's looking to bounce back after last weekend's tough loss to Saskatchewan. Just how tough was that loss? Well, the Huskies scored the game-winning touchdown on the last play of the game to take a 35-33 win. Tonight, the T-Birds face the Regina Cougars. It's a home game for UBC, their first one in about 3 weeks. It's 7 p.m. kickoff time at T-Bird Stadium. UBC is looking to even up their regular season record. Currently, they are 1-2 in the Canada West. Turning now to the number one ranked UBC men's soccer team. Tomorrow, they take on the Alberta Golden Bears in at home, here on Wolfson Field, followed by a Sunday matchup against the Saskatchewan Huskies. 2 p.m. kickoff times at Wolfson Field. UBC men's soccer is 3-0-2 in the Canada West to support their number one ranking. And on the women's side of UBC soccer, T-Birds won the Challenge Cup friendly at Simon Fraser this past Wednesday as a 2-0 victory over the Clan. Striker Stephanie T-Bird scored in the second and 72nd minute. And it was a clean sheet for goalkeeper Jacqueline Dunnett. This T-Birds goalie had an easy night, making just 2 saves for the shutout. UBC is 16-2-1 all-time in the Challenge Cup series. Tomorrow, UBC women's soccer take on the Alberta Pandas. That's a noon local time kickoff in Edmonton, followed by the Saskatchewan Huskies in Saskatoon on Sunday. T-Birds are 2-2-1 in the Canada West. Turning now to UBC men's rugby. Tomorrow they take on the Marilomas at Vancouver's Connaught Park. That's a 2:30 start. Now to UBC golf. The T-Birds men's golf team this past week playing at the Vandal Classic hosted by the University of Idaho. The team placed second overall. Rookie Nathan Ward was the low scorer for the T-Birds. He shot a 3-round total of 213. That's 7th overall individually. While the other rookie for the T-Birds, Corey Renfrew, he tied the tournament low with a 66 in the second round. Next up for the T-Birds men's golf team, they are playing at the Points Robert Golf Course in Point Roberts, Washington, next week, Tuesday through Wednesday. On the women's side of UBC golf, playing at the Inland Empire Intercollegiate in Spokane, Washington. The team placed 8th overall. Katie Snell was the lowest scorer for the T-Birds, shooting a 3-round total of 229. That was good for 10th individually. And in 2 weeks, UBC Women's Golf will be playing at the Bronco Fall Invitational at Banbury Golf Course in Idaho. And finally, we just like to remind you, BC AAA High School football is on our airwaves at CITR 101.9 FM tonight. It'll be Centennial taking on Carson Graham. That's a 7 p.m. kickoff in North Vancouver. And that'll be following the CITR Sports Bar hosted by our own sports guru, Ryan Sullivan. And on location in North Vancouver, the action will be brought to you by play-by-play Tyler Noble and alongside colored commentator Wilson Wong. And Peter, as I mentioned earlier, it's the presidential installation day here at UBC. And what I think of Professor Toop is that if he doesn't show up to some varsity T-Birds games and gets all excited with the blue and gold face paint, I don't think he's a worthy president.
Okay, so the message is out. Professor Toop, if you're listening, we require that you wear yellow gold and blue.
Blue and gold, yeah.
Blue
official
and gold.
Official T-Bird colors.
Yeah, show your T-Bird colors at the next varsity game. And Jason, actually, I have another question for you. What is the deal with UBC football losing such heartbreakers. I mean, they're breaking my heart. You know, I'm crying here. They're breaking my heart. What's up with that?
Oh, man, it's just so tough to lose on the last play of the game in the dying seconds. I mean, this past week, they had just, they scored a touchdown with just minutes left, and that seemed to be, you know, the turning point of the game. The game should be wrapped up, but their defense just, you know, just one crucial mistake at the last moment, and it cost them the game. And that's happened for two straight games, and hopefully they can bounce back tonight in front of home fans.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, and I guess the one good side about, you know, losing these heartbreakers is that they're really close to winning, so they've obviously got what it takes to win a game tonight, hopefully.
Yes, much unlike their 0-8 season 2 years ago, they actually do have a chance to win every game, I think, this year.
Well, I don't think we should talk about that 0-8 season anymore. That's something that we should forget, really. But anyway, of course, before we go tonight, we shall check in with meteorologist Cindy Yu for a look at your weekend weather.
Thanks, Peter. Well, weather has been great these past few days. Even though the flow was slightly zonal, the nice high pressure south of us held the weather nicely and caused nothing but some morning fog. Well, that is about to change tomorrow as the weak frontal system rolls in. You will see increasing cloud throughout the day and some possible drizzle going into the evening. Don't worry, tomorrow will still be an okay day. Temperature-wise, currently it is 17 degrees outside the CITR studio with beautiful blue skies. Into the evening, a few clouds with low of 9. Tyler Noble is on location today. Tyler, if you're listening, you guys will be fine tonight. Overnight, fog will again dissipate in the morning. Tomorrow, cloudy with sunny periods, 30% chance of shower late day. I'd say probably around 4 or 5 p.m. That's when the cold front is rolling in. Sunday, a mix of sun and cloud, 30% chance of shower. Windy with high of 16 and low of 10. Monday, sunny with a few clouds, high of 16 and low of 9. There you go. That's how your weekend will look like. There will be quite a bit of clouds and a little bit of sun, but temperatures are reasonable. I was expecting a slightly stronger frontal system, but it turned out to be, you know, nothing but some possible drizzles. We don't really care about drizzles, do we? If you have any questions regarding the weather, you can email me at citrweather@gmail.com. This is Cindy Yu, and that was your weekend weather forecast. Now back to you, Peter.
Thank you very much for that, Cindy. So, from the sounds of it, it looks like, well, you know, we'll have a mixed bag for the weekend, but then when the week comes and it's time to go back to school, it's sunny again. So, I guess this will give us another reason to stay at home and do all our schoolwork. Isn't that so?
Sure, if that's what you're going to do. I mean, the rain is only going to affect us at night, so you still have all the daytime to enjoy whatever.
Well, there you go. You said it. We'll only be doing schoolwork at night. Thank you very much for that, Cindy. That's our program for Friday, September 29th. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Robert Mangelsdorf produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. I'm Peter Otis. For the entire news team here at CITR, thanks for listening. Now, stay tuned for Ryan Sullivan and the Friday Night Sports Bar, followed by high school football at 7 o'clock. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
The Friends of CITR card is here. Buy your card now and get great discounts at businesses throughout the Lower Mainland, including Antisocial Skate Shop and Gallery, Hits Boutique, Burku's Angels, the People's Co-op Bookstore, Spartacus Books, and Magpie Magazine Gallery. The Friends of CITR card is $5 for CITR members and $15 for anyone else. Check out www.citr.ca/friends for a full listing of Friends of Businesses.